Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roerink, Jack Spencer, and Jacob Kanzler. A little later, Pat Gagliardi, the chair of the Liquor Control Commission, will be joining us to talk about Republic National, among other issues. But John, the big subject in town is the deal that the legislature has finally cut with the governor regarding the budget. Who made out the winner?
I don't think anybody came out as a winner. I don't think either side can say they won. I think they both kind of came off looking ineffectual, and people across the state are wondering why it took so long to resolve this issue.
Do you disagree, Jack?
Well, I would say that the Republicans won a hollow victory. They basically are getting more of what was closer to their version of the budget. I'm not sure it's the kind of thing you exactly celebrate or look back on and say, wow, gee, we really came out ahead. But when you see what the governor put out initially, this thing they're going to end up with is going to look a lot more like what the Republicans wanted.
What do you think, Jacob? Is there a winner in any of this?
Well, look, it's all about messaging, right? And so you have to ask the question, what does the governor get to say at the end of all this? I saw a number of press releases last week with ex-Republican lawmaker votes to restore Whitmer's vetoes. So is there a better argument than that? The second thing I would say is we keep saying in our stories the governor did this to bring the Republican leaders back to the table on road funding. Are we talking about road funding? I don't think so. So my answer is I don't know how you can argue the governor won this, and so you would probably give this to the Republicans.
You could say that the governor won this and that she was able to get things into the budget and get started talking about things that have not been part of the conversation yet. Eventually, I believe we're going to get this Michigan Reconnect program that she's talking about as far as helping get non-traditional students back into community college. That was not part of this deal, but I imagine we're going to see that in January. We didn't see a Rhodes deal, but I imagine that that's coming up in January. I know Jack's going to disagree with that. We'll talk about that later. Also, as I was looking through the line item vetoes that were restored, and I spent more hours than I thought I was going to on that project. It took me a little longer than that hour that I told you, John, that it was going to take me to do it. But as I went through those and I realized what got restored and what didn't get restored, and I saw all of the special boutique little $500,000, $1 million contracts that were in there or little give-me's for these corporate vendors, and then seeing what did get put in there, she didn't make out all that bad. The governor got stuff in there that, I mean, she got her Department of Corrections back the way that she wanted it. She's now got the legislature committing to doing the budget on July 1. I'm not saying that she won this thing. I'm just not completely convinced that she lost it, John.
When you talk to people outside of Lansing, I don't think either side won. And the sad thing is our politics have gotten to the point where it's a discussion of, well, how am I going to win? Or how am I going to win over the person I've got to negotiate with? Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone.
How much of it is, though, that it's because people are so engaged on a political front about impeachment and Donald Trump, and any type of drama regarding state government right now just isn't all that sexy and isn't very compelling because they didn't feel any of the cuts, and by and large, things are humming along just fine. So we'll just find out who's the next person to testify. You know, what is Adam Schiff saying?
I think an awful lot to the average person, all of this stuff is like the Peanuts parent's voice. Wah, 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 yep. Wah, wah, wah. I just don't think. And I'm telling you, I'm not so sure that's as new as we want to, you know, try to claim it is. I'm not so sure. That hasn't been going on for a decade.
Did you get that reference, Jacob? The Peanuts parents?
Yes, I watched Peanuts quite a
All
bit.
All right. When I was... Okay, good. Good, good.
Thanks for trying to age me out here.
That happened before the podcast.
Yeah, I apparently am not as old as other people, so I guess I don't know things.
But you did get the Peanuts, you did get the womp-womp.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Charles Schultz was still going strong in my early childhood.
That's good, because then you'll know at some point how your son's going to hear you.
Why did this take so long? I mean, if people aren't really paying attention and they don't necessarily care, why did this take so long?
Just an absolute disagreement. I still don't know if the Republicans planned it from the beginning or if halfway through the summer somebody said, boy, I kind of like the budget we're doing. I hope we, it's too bad we have to negotiate it with the governor. And someone else said, hey, wait a minute, maybe we don't. But that's where it started, with this whole thing that nobody really had ever, I don't think, conceived of before, to just, you know, come let it get down to the last 10 days and just say, okay, governor, we're going to negotiate with you. But, oh, if the negotiations go bad, we can just send you the one that we've got and that we've already made. Well, I still insist that was an impossible situation for the governor to negotiate under. And so it just went south from there. And then her reaction, and everybody says, gee, why did she do this? Why did she do that? But go back and listen to the advice she was getting from everybody. Boy, you've got to do something strong, et cetera,
et cetera. You've got to be strong, yeah.
So she did kind of what everybody was telling her to do. And then the Republicans are jumping on it going, okay, well, this isn't funded, that isn't funded, because the governor vetoed it. And, you know, it just turned into this thing. I mean, like I said, on paper, I think it's a victory for the Republicans, but it's a hollow victory. It's like, well, yeah, sort of, we won.
I feel like the Republicans also have tried to string this out to try and get as many shots into the governor as humanly possible, and maybe they've been successful. I mean, over the Thanksgiving break, we saw the press releases go out about all the things that the governor cut. But again, I don't know how much that sunk in to the public. How much do they care, and how much do they blame the governor for, or do they just think that it's partisan noise, that just can't possibly be it, that it's so ludicrous to think that the governor doesn't want to fund police or public health or jails, that it just kind of flows through somebody's head because they're like, ah, there's something that's not here that we're missing, and we're just not going to pay attention.
How much would they be upset with the governor if they were paying 45 cents a gallon more? I think they'd be a lot more upset with the governor.
Well, they wouldn't be paying 45 cents. Wasn't she going to graduate it?
Okay. Yeah, you're right. We would only be paying 15 cents right now.
Yeah, I think they'd be delighted about paying more for gas.
So what does Whitmer do now about roads? Do we start a new, does she come back with a new proposal at the beginning of the year, later this year?
I think she does. I think the question I'm curious to see is, does she actually specify the way the revenue is raised in her proposal, or does she just say, we need to raise 1.8 or 2 billion and then have her team negotiate with legislature where you kind of can build those pieces out separately?
So you start with the big number first and work backwards, basically. If we need
right.
$2 billion,
and don't start with a specific, you know, revenue source.
This is sounding a lot like Jack's proposal he's been talking about for the entire year, which is you start with all right, so what are you willing to do as far as cuts or reforms to teacher pension, and what's left, what's the hole, and then you tell them what the cents per gallon it's going to be, whether it's 30 cents or 25 cents or 20 or whatever.
Well, I also would be interested, I don't know if she wants to build her budget around it the way she did a year ago. I'm not so sure that was
a house of cards.
That, yeah, because if you don't get the very first thing, here's your whole budget that's, you know, right, being affected. And I have to admit, I wasn't like the instant that I saw her budget, I didn't start going, oh, she's making a big mistake. But I think in hindsight, it's like, boy, that really led to a lot of problems.
She was able to make a compelling case, though. I mean, when she did her stump speech, I remember covering the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce thing, and she got a pretty good reaction to it. She made a logical, coherent argument, but then you apply the fractured lens of politics, if you will, to it, and it suddenly doesn't make so much sense.
Yeah, I think that made her more vulnerable, that she didn't have a lot of leeway, because it was not just that wasn't happening with the 45 cent, and that they were saying, well, gee, we got to separate it from the budget and we're going to have to discuss that differently. The other thing that it happened with that is, you know, basically, how does she should have had a secondary budget, a third budget to fall back on. And I just think that it was like the first move in the chess game. And if your first move turns out to be wrong, you're kind of lost and behind the eight ball the rest of the match.
So the governor doesn't have, we don't have the final language right now on what the legislative oversight is going to be on the state administrative board. Does it look weak, though, that she said she would not do any type of statutory changes on the state administrative board and how it's structured, and now she's going to have to come back and do something.
Did she say statutory change? Because her original statement was, I don't want to limit the powers of the executive office of this administration or the next. So does this potential move kind of cut into that?
Or does it just give a little bit more power to the legislature? And in which case, you can say, I didn't limit the executive powers at all. I just gave the legislature a little bit more.
Exactly. Yeah. So you add kind of another step in the process for the admin board. So can she make that claim still? I mean, maybe not. But in the end, like, I don't know who she needs to defend herself against. I mean, I guess it's, the Republicans aren't going to be going around saying, well, she said she wouldn't limit this and then she did or something. So
it's not like she's going to use this again anyway.
Right. It would just sunset the thing at the end of the legislative session, be done with it.
I mean, right,
she's gonna make a pledge, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, she's gonna say, I'm not gonna do right. this as long as the legislature negotiates in good faith and we don't do these non-negotiated budgets again. And we may not even have to do that anymore. I mean, if they can do something with the roads, then is there a point in all that back and forth that we went through this past summer? And if the legislature has to get their budget done by July 1, you really can't do that anyway, can you?
I don't see them doing the roads at all. I'm not saying they won't roll up their sleeves and pretend or talk about it a little bit, but the idea that they're going to get out by July 1st in an election year and they're going to do anything really other than the budget, I just have a lot of trouble believing that.
You don't think they can get a roads thing done in February or March? Or
no, they're not going to get a roads thing done. They want to separate it. They want to do two things. Pretty obvious that the legislature, the Republicans, want to totally separate this thing out and do it in a separate way. And,
is it because of a political reason, you think, Jack, that they don't want to do the roads? Or because they don't really believe it's a problem?
Their argument is this is something bigger that you just don't do on a yearly basis, that we've got to really sit down and look at the whole thing and look at it more in terms of like 10 years at a time and look that far ahead. Okay, to me, number one, that says I don't do it in an election year. So they missed the non-election year last year, and I just cannot see them doing that between February and May. Why anyone would believe they could do that?
You just be overly optimistic, Jack.
Well, what I keep hearing is, look, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And I just keep saying, no, you can't. I've never seen that happen before. So, no, I think it's a 2021 issue at best, because I just see them being completely caught up in the election year, and it would be amazing for them to do it in an election year.
I think the governor's going to have a lot of reason to get this done next year. I think the business community's already primed up for it in a way that I haven't seen a unified business community in a long time. I think there's a lot of interest groups that are going to hold their feet to the fire, because there does have to be a long-term solution. And if you're Gretchen Whitmer, why wait for that close to your reelection campaign to try to solve this? It's just not going to be a hard pill. This is not going to be a Joyville once they pass this. It's going to be a difficult lift. Do it now.
Or, to Jack's point, maybe there's incentive for the governor to wait a little bit longer on the chance that she could get the House back and get a Democrat-led House that will be more in line with her thinking.
Yeah, but then she still has to deal with a conservative Senate.
Who's going to be trying to keep her from a victory. If you can get it done now, get it done now. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to keep these talks going.
Well, she's shown that she's willing to do bold moves. Maybe she pulls another bold move and says, I'm not going to sign another piece of legislation until it has something to do with repairing the roads. We've just seen some bold moves in October. It doesn't mean they were turned out to be the best, but they were bold moves, and yep, it changed the trajectory of everything.
Yep, and I think she's, like I said, I think she's got an incentive to get it done now.
She has the incentive, but now what is the gas increase, 20 cents, whatever? What is it they're going to vote in for a increase in the gas tax in an election year?
It doesn't necessarily have to be just a gas tax. It could be a combination of things. There's a whole lot of different ways you could approach it. You could go for a penny for roads on sales tax. Put that in front of voters.
Ooh. That would be fun. I don't know. Once bitten, twice shy on putting up a ballot proposal on roads. Hasn't Whitmer done that before? We'll bring in Pat Gagliardi to talk about another issue that's going on in state government. Join us now in MERS World Headquarters is the chair of the Liquor Control Commission, Pat Gagliardi. Thanks for making the trip over here. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Nice to be with you. And if this is World Headquarters, we are in deep doo-doo.
Yeah, I know. It is indeed. It is indeed in all its magnificent glory. Well,
good view, though.
Oh, it is a great view.
The garage next door, at least, it's clean.
Well, you know, the privacy fence, now that we put the privacy fence up, we don't get to see.
In all honesty, though, you can see that you can see the Capitol right now until they finish that building next to us. Now we're not going to be able to see the Capitol.
Yeah, whatever that building's going to be. I don't even know what that's going to be yet.
Maybe that'll be the new world headquarters.
No. We'll never abandon this 1893 structure. It's glorious.
It is glorious.
So let's talk about something that's even more glorious right now, and that is Republic National. How glorious is the state's prominent liquor distributor? Are they going to get a Christmas card from you this year or not, Pat?
Probably not from me, but here's what happened, and if I can put it in succinctly as possible, Kyle, is that when I came on board the end of August, there were troubles going on with Republic National. They were setting up a new state-of-the-art, they claim, a warehouse in Livonia to service the state to deliver to our licensees all 12,000 of them alcohol case a week if they make that order.
This is just liquor, right?
This is just distilled spirits. Just to remind the public that we, the state of Michigan, is the wholesaler of distilled spirits. And so that's why we make so much money on alcohol. We have big markup. We control the market. So when I came on board, they were having troubles going back into the spring where they were trying to institute some new software. And it seemed to be getting worse. And we were told once the warehouse went online in first part of September that it would all be fixed. And as you can see, here we are. I'm speaking with you here Monday, the 9th of December. It's not. So
I understand we only have three of these ADAs. Mm-hmm. And two of them control something like 97% of the volume. Is it time to look at adding another one? Or I mean, I don't know that much about the system, but it would seem like three is not very many for a whole state.
Well, we've had three, and we're down to two in early part of the system. The problem is not the number. The problem is getting companies that want to do this. It's capital intensive to be able to say, I'm going to deliver to any licensee once a week, whether it's Ironwood, Benton Harbor, Detroit, or Alpena, or anywhere in between. It takes a lot of time, logistics, warehousing, and delivery to do that. And so what has happened is we're lucky, I think, to have three companies that want to do it. The problem is... To your point, John, is that one company has kind of cornered the market with two-thirds of the product. And we have to take a look whether it makes sense to have one company have that much control over delivery. Because what we're finding in the last 6-8 months is that when a licensee goes to order, let's say your favorite corner store or your favorite supermarket goes to order product, it says it's out of stock. It says you can order it, and then they contact you later. It can't be delivered. And that just puts a lot of stress on the system, let alone a lot of stress on our partners. And partners are the licensees, but our other partners are the distributors themselves. We've got a system that has a lot of partners. The state of Michigan has partnered with distributors and retailers and manufacturers to try and deliver this system. And why do we do it? Two reasons. We raise a lot of money for state and local government. And we also keep some control on it. Because remember, as you've all watched, as you covered the marijuana situation, we are dealing with a controlled substance, a substance that if you overuse can kill you. And so a big part of what we do is not just collect taxes. That's important. Not just license people, but try and have some controls over when and how it gets out there and in what fashion. Try and keep the right people distributing it, the right people selling it, so that we're not sending people out into society drinking and driving underage kids drinking, all those things that we don't want to see happen.
Right. You've looked at this issue, obviously, from a national perspective. I know you've been involved in this industry a long time. What other states are the wholesaler? Are we part of, are we the norm? Are we out of the norm? What are other states doing?
We are one of 16 states and a bunch of counties around the country that are control situations where we wholesale part or all. Some states wholesale the whole thing, beer, wine, and distilled spirits. We just do distilled spirits. We do collect a good-sized tax off beer and wine, but we make our real money for both the state of Michigan and our local units of government off distilled spirits.
Roughly, what are we talking as far as money that raised annually for the state through spirits?
Well, I'll give you a couple of facts. We sold last year, and I say we because we are the wholesaler, all 10 million of us, we sold $1.5 billion, with a B, dollars worth of distilled spirits in this state. How does that rank nationally? Well, we're the 10th largest state in population. We are the 7th largest in distilled spirit sale.
Oh. And people, so we like our liquor.
Well, then, and we get a lot of laughs with that. You're giving me a little Scoobyism there with like in the liquor. You always take shots at those of us from the UP and how much we like our liquor. It really points to the fact, though, that we are an entertainment destination for the Upper Midwest, the Great Lakes State. And I think you can see it wherever you go around the state that our travel, tourism, and entertainment is so big. And alcohol's an amenity to that. It's part of everything from a ski hill to a marina, from a hockey game downtown Detroit to diving at the Pictured Rocks in the UP. I mean, it's just everywhere. And we've seen a lot of growth in our alcohol sales, but it's not just from consumption. In fact, our per capita consumption is lower than Wisconsin, Minnesota, and the Dakotas, according to scientists, not according to Pat Gagliardi. We have a big entertainment state. Lots of people come from the Upper Midwest to be here. When they come here for entertainment, part of that amenity to our entertainment platter is alcohol, and I think that's where most of the growth comes from. And where I come from in the UP, you just have to look at the Straits of Mackinac, St. Ignace, Mackinac City, and, of course, Mackinac Island and that whole area, where little towns of 1,000 people grow to towns of 60, 70,000 people on any given weekend in the summertime. So it's a big deal.
Pat, back to the Republic National distributing issue. I know that from watching the statements back and forth that the Liquor Control Commission is taking this very seriously, but do we have any indication that this is kind of affecting consumers and the consumer level? I mean, it's not like shelves are like empty right now, right?
Well, we have had actually a lot of pictures sent to us by retailers showing empty spots in their shelves where they haven't been able to get certain types of product. And so we've seen a lot of empty shelves, mostly certain products that are undeliverable. And they're all products, at least since I've been there at the end of August, they're all products that are delivered by RNDC, National Wine and Spirits. So it is a problem. And we have those pictures on file, and people keep sending us pictures. We've had over 1,000 of our licensees bother to write a complaint on our website to us, or make a phone call that they're willing to put their name behind.
Put that in perspective. I mean, is this the most complaints you've gotten, as far as you know, at the Liquor Control Commission?
I don't ever remember, even my tour from 2003 to 2011, anything like this. But once again, it's all made up a problem of our partners. Our partners are these distributors, and our partners are the licensees. And I believe, going back to prioritization, that RNDC is in 34 states. I believe, even though they built a beautiful new warehouse here, I believe we weren't a priority to them. I believe that they waited too long to get on top of this. We've got complaints going back to the spring, long before I got there this year, and they're all complaints about delivery and product availability.
Now, earlier you had mentioned that maybe it's time to look at rebalancing that the percent that the distributors have in the market. Mm-hmm. If you do that, is that something that you can do at the administrative level, or is that something that has to be done with legislation? How does that happen if you decide to recalibrate that?
Well, it used to be that you could not move from ADA, which is authorized distribution agent. Those are the three that warehouse and deliver on behalf of the people of the state of Michigan, without the okay of the commission. And we're looking at going back to something like that. It was taken off during the last 8 years of a previous commission, but we're looking going back to that, trying to figure out how to get balance and yet still be productive, because these are businesses. That's the business end of the business silo that we're in. We have really two major silos, the business silo and then the public health and safety silo. And it's really quite unique when you think about it, John. We're wearing those two hats, which seem diametrically opposed, right? If you hear political speak by politicians, too much regulation, yet here, when we're dealing with this controlled substance, you don't get that speak because people want this product regulated. And you can see as you go through the infancy of delivering marijuana through retailers that people want that part to the public health and safety side to be spoken to. But I think, going back to your point, I think we can rebalance it. But some of it goes back to these big manufacturers. Let's take Diageo. A big spirit they would have would be like Crown Royal. They sign contracts nationally in all states. So it makes it a little unique to deliver, get product and deliver here. So we need to have a conversation with the manufacturers too about how we can best deliver product here. Like I said, we are the seventh largest market of the 50 states for all manufacturers. We have 10,600 SKUs available in our book right now. We certainly have offered under past commissions and even now a lot of ability to get your product to the store here in Michigan and give your product a chance to take off. If you go back, there's an old story about Grey Goose that Michigan didn't delist it back in the early 2000s. And it stayed, and they put on a new marketing firm, and look what happened since then. It's just taken off, and it's one of the class vodkas in the whole world. So Michigan is a good place for people to do business. We just have to figure out how it makes sense for our partners, the licensees, and our consumers.
Jack?
Okay, in a normal market situation, obviously, and I realize this isn't exactly a normal marketing situation, but this would be an opportunity for the other two competing companies to pick up their percentages, et cetera, et cetera. Is that their attitude, or do they not necessarily even have an aggressive attitude toward this?
I think the other two ADAs do want to pick up business. The problem goes back to what I was just saying to John, Jack. These big companies sign national contracts. So RNDC has them in every state. They're going to have them here kind of thing. So we need to have a discussion with the suppliers, too, as well as the distributors, about how we're going to get good product to our licensees. I will tell you that this has really awakened the retailers. They see how they can get caught in a system that looked flawless for many years. They can get caught up in it when the problem happens and they're unable to get product or unable to get it delivered. This has been a good wake-up call and a good reason for us to take a look at the whole system. By the way, at our last commission meeting, I appointed Commissioner Olshovey, and he'll be helped by Hearings Commissioner Clemente. They're going to do a work group just dealing with this whole issue, and we've asked them to come back in 3 and 6 months, depending on how long it takes them, to give some ideas of what we should do. Something might be a legislative change. We might need to go talk to the legislature about it.
Well, that's one of the things I want to ask you about. Is House Bill 5268 was introduced last month. I think it would let bars and restaurants go to other license holders to buy their liquor. Could that be part of the solution? What's your position on that legislation?
Well, I don't have a position other than if you think about it, this is the first step in going back to everybody going to the big box stores to pick up their alcohol. And
don't they do that in Illinois?
Yeah, and it's not a very efficient system. We could go back to state stores and do it. Right now, a licensee from Ironwood to Detroit, from Benton Harbor to Sault Ste. Marie, they get delivered to their establishment if they order a minimum of a case each week, and it's free delivery. It's part of the whole deal that was put together in 97 when we closed state stores and went on to this system, which has worked well for years, as far as the retailers think, anyway.
What about the three-tier system? Is this a testament to the three-tiered system? Maybe the legislature needs to take a look at that?
Well, I think the three-tier system is so solid, I don't know why anybody would want to look at it. All you got to do is go look at the beer aisle and then go over to the soda aisle. All you got to do is look at the wine aisle and go look at the soda aisle or the milk aisle or any other aisle. Our system of three-tier has offered the opportunity of small businesses to get in and get treated equally. If you go to the soda aisle, if you're not Pepsi or Coke, you can't be found.
Sticking to this thing, this idea of the competitors, when you say you should have a conversation with them, is it just your behavior that has to change, or should they be relooking at their business model if they can only do these national contracts? It seems like they're hurting themselves.
We're going to have a discussion with them on behalf of two things. The ability to take care of our partners in this situation, which are the retailers, and to take care of the consumers, the customers. If their business model nationally doesn't fit, maybe they don't fit in Michigan. We've got lots of product out there. We've got a lot of product out there. We've got 10,300,000 five gajillion bottles of vodka. I mean, you got more choice than you ever thought. But we need these people to understand our system may be a little different, but we are a big market. They want to be here. We are the seventh largest state as far as distilled spirit sales go. So they're going to have to take a look at how they operate in our system until the legislature changes it, if they wish to change it.
All right, a couple other things that we wanted to touch on. The computer system that Liquor Control Commission works on, have you guys been modernized? What are you guys working on right now?
Well, there is some modernization going on, but right now all of our licensees are ordering on a system that has Cobalt as a software, and that goes back to the early 70s. So we're trying to work with the Department of LORA to in the governor's office to upgrade that. We have a game plan in mind, but we're going to need to get on top of that and get that done.
Software that's older than me, probably.
It probably is, Kyle. I'm sad to say I was around, but you probably are old enough to be my grandchild, that's for sure. The thing I like about that, though, Kyle, is you almost have as little hair as I do. So you're losing it early, buddy. But it is a problem. If our system goes down and people can't even order, that's a bigger catastrophe than what's going on right now. But it goes back to, as I was saying earlier, it goes back to the fact that during the 2000s, especially the early 2000 to 2008, the state and local governments weren't able to invest in infrastructure. Roads isn't the only problem. Technology we're way behind at the state and local level in having the kind of software we should have for 2020. So these are all reinvestments in our infrastructure. We need to be done that will be good for the taxpayer. In our case, since we wear a business hat, it'll be good for our business partners also.
There's a couple of areas in the state where liquor licenses are getting scarce. Prices are starting to go up. Obviously, part of your job is controlling it, right?
Right.
But it's also an economic development aspect, I would think, too. Do we need more licenses? Is that something you're going to look at?
I get asked that question a lot. I get asked that question by legislators. My good friend Senator Lucido has asked me a million times, why do we have quotas? And I can't explain it to him, because if you really look out there, we have about 27,000 active licenses a year. That's on-premise, where you drink by the glass. That's off-premise, your traditional party store. takeout, and then you have these 9,000 plus now 24-hour licenses that we have. So if you take 27,000 active licenses a year and divide that into 10.1 million people, it comes out for a license for every man, woman, and child, 387. So I think we've got enough licenses, but we have to deal with whatever the legislature, if they want more, we can do it. And that doesn't even take into the account that a lot of these redevelopment zones, they qualify for many, many on-premise licenses. They don't fill them because, you know, there's no sense of trying to put that many on-premise or restaurants, the bars in one area. But we've got lots of licenses. Look at what we've done with craft brewery. Look once again at your stores. Look at the selection you have. It's kind of like the wine selection. There's so many you can't hardly try them all. Wine selection. We've got 10,600 SKUs of distilled spirit. So we've got lots of product. We've got lots of licenses. I think right now we're at a point where we've got to come back to the commission and work with these partners to manage the system better. I think it's incumbent on all of us to come up with a better management of the system. Part of that will be to Kyle's question about technology. Technology will be a major help once it kicks in. But as you know, even if the state were to upgrade our software and our ordering system, there may be glitches there. As you put any system on, it seems like there's problems. So,
do you think there's going to be enough complaints coming from constituents to get the attention of lawmakers?
Oh, geez, I think the lawmakers have been in contact with us. We've had three different House members come over and testify at the hearings on RNDC. So they're hearing, and the governor's office is hearing. They're in constant contact with us. What can and will be done? RNDC is promising to have their end of the deal caught up here in this next week. We'll see. We meet with them again in public hearing. I think it's a week from Wednesday.
Do you believe them?
Based on their track record, it's pretty hard to believe them. I've tried not to take a lot of shots at them, though, Kyle, because enough to get their attention. I don't think they prioritized us. I don't think we had their attention till we started jumping up and down and saying, hey, you know, there's a real, real problem here. There's, you know, we've got to have some help. They finally sent some people in from corporate. There's a gentleman who's in charge, vice president in charge of control states named Joe Gelati, who's here for the month. I think we've finally got their attention. I don't know why it took so long, but we need their help to straighten out their end of the bargain first, and then we need to sit down and talk about, does one distributor need to do two-thirds of our warehousing and delivering? Is that too much in case we have these kind of situations?
Off-topic question we wanted to ask you. If you were governor, how would you go about...
Can I spit my coffee out?
How would you go about raising money for the roads?
If I was governor, how would I... Well, first of all, I would sell Jack Spencer. I think we could get enough money to pave at least the first block out front of here in Ottawa.
Just so they can do Butler.
Butler
would be great.
I would do Jack if they fixed Butler.
Jack, you may be up for sale, buddy.
Well, what... You know what I'm thinking is, who are you selling me to? That could be good or that could be bad.
Well, Jack, I've known you a long time. You know it's not good. Here's what I would say. I'm not making any recommendations. First of all, as you all know at this table, the governor of this state is an old, old friend. The only reason this fat, old, balding guy from up north is in a position like this is because she thinks I can help at liquor control. Usually you don't come back after being out of government and get this opportunity to do what I'm doing. So I have her confidence and I have confidence in her. But what I would say is anything is accomplishable, if that's a word. when I was at my confirmation hearing, Kyle, Senator Hertel, dear friend of mine, as you know, his dad was one of my very best friends. We served together for many years in the 80s and 90s. Said, what can we do? We're not getting stuff accomplished here. And simply what I said is, you all are way more than smart enough to accomplish whatever you want to. You don't need me to tell you what to do. But if you want to take a hint, I think you have to first of all be able to sit down and hear each other. You have to hear what the other side's saying. And I think they do that. I mean, I watched this governor and leadership over there put together this insurance piece at the beginning of the year. I thought, holy cow, that has been a tough, tough issue for anybody to get together on. I know they took a lot of criticism. They were taking criticism from everybody. And I thought, well, usually if you do that, you've got some semblance of a good move forward. And I think something happened to stop that conversation. So they just need to sit and talk. And the other thing I said, we can solve anything. We can solve the road situation. It's whatever they think will work, not what Pat Gagliardi thinks will work. And I use this example. I said, when I was 19, I went to the shores of Lake Erie, went to a place called Cedar Point. I'm from up north. I'd never heard about it. And it's an amusement park. Beautiful sand beaches, 1970. Poison signs on them. No swimming on Lake Erie. Mm. The fall before, the Cuyahoga River caught on fire in Cleveland. The Great Lakes was dead. First Earth Day in 1971. You know, we've already lost a Great Lake. What are we going to do next? And we put our heads together and look at Lake Erie now. It can be done. It just takes a will to sit down and work with each other. I'm not going to criticize or give any ideas. I just know that the leadership in that capital and the governor can put together a deal to fix our roads. They all know we have a road problem. And so I think they can do it. It's just a matter of when they're willing to sit down and work with each other. And it may not be what either side wants, but there is always a deal there, and it can be done. I know those leaders over there. I know several of them personally, as well as the governor. I know they can do this. It's just a matter of when it will happen. I think it will happen.
Pat Gagliardi, the chair of the Liquor Control Commission. Thanks for coming over to MERS World Headquarters talking with us today.
Always good to be at MERS World Headquarters. And I want a better look through your telescope at Mars next time I'm here.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to Pat Gagliardi for coming in. John, Jack, and Jacob, the three J's. It looks like we're going to have some type of internet sports book gaming coming soon. Jack, do you see yourself participating? Let's say Soaring Eagle or
no.
Fire Keepers. No. You wouldn't put any money on?
I doubt it very much. It'd have to be something that was very tempting.
Okay, so let's say, all right, so you're a horse racing guy, and as part of this gaming package, we're going to have parimutuel racing. And you can bet on the ponies on your phone. Now, would you do that?
No, because I've already been doing it on the internet, and anyway, it's not that big of
a
difference.
You're such a wet blanket. Okay, I'm going to move on. John, would you bet on your phone if you could do it through, let's say, Motor City Casino or MGM?
I'm Dutch. I don't even like to put a quarter in the slot machine when I'm in Vegas.
Oh, my goodness.
Let me give an example
okay. Of
the difference. When you could go on there, and it's been a couple of years since I've done it because I just didn't renew it. When you would go on there, I could bet a Mountaineer racetrack. I could bet any of the racetracks on California. I could bet on in Louisiana, Houston. I could bet on all the ones in Florida. But if I was going to sit there and I was going to put it on a track, the few left in Michigan, and actually now there's only one, I could watch it, but I couldn't bet. And I just it's just for anybody who does that and knows, well, the one place that a percentage of what I bet can't go to is Michigan. Hmm. So that's really the only difference to somebody like me who was looking at, you know, the races.
All right.
So is it none of the money I bet could go to Michigan?
So what I'm hearing is that this may actually influence you. If you knew that it went into Michigan, then you could get really invested into the Michigan horse racing scene. That's what I'm hearing,
well,
here, Jack.
It has to be built up. It's practically gone now. But yes, it would be more interesting in a lot of cases to say, hey, this is going on in Detroit. And yeah, you know, there used to be whole people. I know I'm really aging myself, but there used to be two full horse racing pages in the Detroit Free Press every Sunday, and there used to be one full page, or sometimes one and a half every weekday.
And then Roosevelt died and everything changed.
That is what absolutely, well, we're talking back, you know, in the 60s and 70s, and it's really been destroyed.
All right, Jacob, last one. Would you go on your phone and put bets on, let's say, Michigan State?
Probably not. I'm not a really big gambler. I thought you were going to ask me about horse racing.
Okay, would you bet on horse racing?
Probably not either. I was trying to think of something unique to say beyond what John and Jack said, since no one wants to do this, but I think it'd be more fun to just go down to the Kentucky Derby and wear fancy clothes and drink a mint julep. Yes. I'm all about the experience.
I just wish we had it right now, because I would totally take Alabama and the 7 points against Michigan. That seems like just easy money ready to be made. I'd make that bet if it was 14 points that Michigan was getting against Alabama, but I guess I can't do it yet. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care. When the deer